foes and false friends are all around me, Davos. They infest my city like roaches, and at night I feel them crawling over. The fat man's fingers coiled into a fist, and all his chins trembled. My son Wendell came to the twins aghast. He ate Lord Walder's bread and salt, and hung his sword upon the wall to feast with his friends. And they murdered him. Murdered, I say, and may the phrase choke upon their fables. I drink with Jared, jape with Simon, promise Rhaegar the hand of my own beloved granddaughter. But never think that means I have forgotten. The North remembers, Jon Snow. The North remembers, and the Mummer's farce is almost done. My son is home. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it was best to rename and rebrand ourselves as the game did so with a second edition. Now, we are the White Book Podcast, and each week we bring you your dose of strategy, insight, and all-around geeky goodness. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R.R. Martin for this game and world we love, but more importantly to you, our listeners. Please consider supporting us on Patreon so that we can continue to make this show the best it can, and I promise we have big plans for the future. This is The White Book.
Little longer than
some lately.
I make fun of that quote a lot. The North remembers, but when you hear like that whole passage, it's like, damn, that was good. That was some deep-ish.
Yeah.
Also, phrases do suck.
Yeah, they suck, but Louise broke them.
Yeah, yeah. And I did lose to one yesterday on, I lost to, I'm going to get the house wrong. I think Lanny, phrase using, Faceless Man, because he's a real good substitute for Walder if you manage to kill him. That part.
Oh.
That part hurt.
Interesting. So, also, Barrow Crossing did very well at war with all the Frey stuff, so maybe the Freys are back in full force.
Well, I definitely think the Freys are back with this new champ card. That's faux show.
Well, sort of. I mean, we can talk about that in a sack. I think there's a caveat to Kyle's statement about the Freys in regard to this one, but we'll get there. I mean, we can get into it quickly, but at the top of the show, I do want to make sure we introduce ourselves. Of course, this is The White Book. Should be episode 325, as long as I don't have to rearrange anything again at the last minute. And I'm Will, also known as Kevin.
I'm Kyle, and this is the first time I've ever been chastised for being too focused on getting to where we needed to go.
That's true.
First for everything, I'm Scott, and the first time ever that everyone else around me on a cast has been sober.
Yeah. And everyone else is in the Midwest, I think. That's normally there's someone somewhere else, but we're skewing west this week. Well, before we jump over to the card, I do also want to take a quick minute here at the top of the show to go ahead and mention our Patreon. Still kind of in the works of trying to rearrange some of the award tiers and such, but wanted to throw out a huge prop to Matt S. and Michael D. for subscribing or becoming our patrons. So yeah, if that's something you think you might want to help out with, make sure we can pay for the website hosting and that sort of thing. Plus a soon to be revised reward kind of system. By all means, jump on and float an amount even as small as a dollar our way.
We're right at float 2.
Even better. Twice as good, you might say.
Wait till I get to 3. I can count, guys.
Ooh, man. And folks say public education's good for nothing these days. Wait a minute. Were you publicly educated, Scott?
I was. I went to public school.
Good, good. I realized I didn't know after I said that, so figured I should make sure.
Yeah, not fancy enough for all that private school stuff.
Yeah,
maybe one day. So card, let's talk about the card. Or do you want to do the cards that we have that no one else has?
Well, you know what? Let's make people wait for those ever so slightly. Let's do them in the middle. We'll go ahead and jump to the card Kyle wanted to talk about so he can continue with that. Mm-hmm. You wanna lay the text of that one on us, Kyle?
I do. So we have Breaking Ties with some pretty good art for being a champ card. I was like, some of the other ones we've seen spoiled lately, I feel like the mug is not up to snuff. But anyways, this is 4/7/1, 4 reserve, plot deck limit 1, thank goodness, and it is a House Frey and a Scheme. The action, sacrifice a loyal character to choose a non-loyal character or location. Return it to its owner's hand. Limit twice per round. And I think this is bonkers. I think it makes Rain's decks insanely dangerous. the 4 reserve does hurt. But there are a lot of non-loyal characters that are really good. Really, really good, especially in like Lannister, is where I go to, or a lot of the neutrals that are starting to see a lot more play. And there are some cheap loyal dudes that I have no problem sacrificing for this, especially. And this is another some more flea bottom fuel, right? So I get a cheap loyal guy, and I'm going to sack him. I'm going to flea bottom, and I'm going to sack him. Now you're out your 2 best non loyal things. Not even characters, just things. And, yeah.
Yeah, it gets worse than that because you're usually getting a benefit for the people coming into play, right? So I'll sack my green blood traders all day to flea bottle them in and do more and get more cards, or the same thing with Hota.
Mm-hmm.
It just is really gross, and it's another reason why we can have the flea bottle debate about if it's good for the game or bad for the game, but also this card is another one of those cards that really pushes the power level and makes me sad for Winterfell Archery Range being the champ card that doesn't push the power level.
Yeah, that is true. The Archery Range just has not found a home. It may be the, I don't know, the pinch of powder of second edition. We'll see how that shakes out. I'm a little curious. I mean, this looks like a super strong, interesting plot, but in Kyle's long description there, I never caught how this was bringing House Frey back, like you said earlier, making them a thing.
Well,
it isn't.
I know. I'm putting him on the spot, though.
Making me feel bad. I mean, it's just more like anytime you see a trait, right? It can only help. Especially because Frey is one they seem to have actually committed to for synergistic sakes. So, like, that to me bodes well. I mean, it hits a lot of Freys real bad, but...
Yeah, it sure does. You can't sack any of your own, but it could sure bounce some if your opponent's playing it. I mean, and a boatload of other things, you know. Arions, Tyrians, Randall Tarleys.
A lot of real good-ish. And like you said, Victarian, for something as...
It could hit flea bottoms. You can flea bomb, then hit a flea bottom.
It can. It can. I don't know how often. I mean, it's going to depend, of course, on their discard pile, I think. But I get a lot less value out of bouncing the one gold location than about anything else.
Oh, but if you have Euron, Euron's like, I'll take a different one from your discard, and you can never do this again.
If there's another flea bottom in their discard. For sure. Or if I've got a Scene in Flames to pick it out of their hand after I bounce it. Like, there's definitely some options, but I think I've got to get into the right position for that.
Yeah, I could see a lot of decks liking this. Choke, I think, really likes it, right? Anytime you can leverage economy is good. If you do a bunch of hand hate stuff, this is good. Because I would love to, again, you said, not only is it sweet to send a Tyrian back, but to send a Tyrian back and then discard it for intrigue is, I mean, even sweeter, right? So I think there's lots. I really like this plot, but this is my kind of... It is aggressive. It has, I think, pretty good stats. And it allows you to be creative in coming up with ways to use it. And I think the champ even calls it out. Like, talk about playstyles. Like, I've always liked versatile cards. He even says that I want to be used aggressive or defensive. It can do a lot of different things. And I feel like that's a card that enables your skill as a player to shine. This is a card that rewards good play.
I think it's going to be a card that rewards, I guess maybe aggressive play is the closest that's coming to mind. Here, I don't know. I really think at the moment the best use of Breaking Ties strikes me as kind of the back breaking play or whatever, right? You know, you pile on the pressure, and the instant they try to land anything big enough to actually affect the board, you bounce it back. They can't actually play it. Again, they've used up their gold, whatever, and you just keep hammering them to eliminate their board presence. But I haven't had the chance to play it yet, so, you know, maybe the more defensive end of the play is going to shake out stronger than I'm feeling at the moment. But
well, he calls out in the article, you know, it's a nice alternative to nightmares, to dealing with things like the wall and Chamber of the Painted Table. I mean, sending a wall back is a huge tempo play. That's a lot of gold. That's a round it doesn't go off. And like you said, especially if you pair that with Reigns, now you have freed up event card slots, knowing that you have a possibly even more effective option because it's on demand to deal with those kind of things. So I really enjoy this plot a lot. Probably one of my top five favorites.
I actually dislike it for similar reasons. I think it doesn't require you to earn such a big tempo hit, right? Like, you just have to play your Green Blood Traitor or play your Queen's Assassin or whatever, and then you could take away the card that their deck is based upon, like the wall, or even besides that, just something like a Gregor or a seven cost card. I think big effects like this are things you should have to earn somehow. And this is a big power creep. I think a lot of people aren't going to realize until they see this happen what happens if you with this card, and it's dirty.
I think there's a lot of pitfalls you can walk into. I mean, sacrificing a character is still a you know, dicey move, and the four reserve you still can't laugh at. I mean, you can. I think there are still ways that this can hurt you if you aren't careful with how you use it, or if you don't build your deck to have those cheap loyal characters in it. And some decks, it's not going to help. I think Reigns is probably the best place for it because of that, because you don't force yourself into it. But there are a lot of studs that are loyal, and if you have a seven and a six cost out there, and they're both loyal, you're just like, well, shoot. You know, this is not the answer to that.
How many of those
six
drops are loyal, though? I think a quick look would probably show most of them are not loyal.
I mean, you definitely have to build knowing that this is in your plot deck, or vice versa. But, I mean, Martell is definitely going to play this, probably every Martell deck, and if you're not, then you probably should find room. They're the only one that just automatically, like, yeah, I play this. This is what I do. But there's still many others that should play this if they build correctly.
Highlights include Khal Drogo, Robb Stark, Stannis, the new Viper, the Blackfish, Tyene, Balon, Brienne. So yeah, take that, Will.
Well, I mean, that's fair. I just wanted to make someone else do the work to look that up. Of course, you know, some of the first six costers popping into my head were like Jamie and Victarion and that sort of thing. That's not loyal. So I knew some of the others had to be out there. But there you go. You proved me wrong, Kyle.
Woohoo!
Yeah. You know, there is one other thing that I think is pertinent about Breaking Ties that worries me a little bit about its design and kind of its place in the meta at large from a design perspective. In that, you know, a lot of folks have kind of been doing some analysis of how many cheap, you know, two cost and under or three cost and under, depending on how you want to define it. Loyal characters in the game, and I'm a little worried that Breaking Ties, the way this is worded, where you're having to sacrifice your loyal character, is going to wind up putting a lot of constraint on FFG to stay out of the realm of more cheap loyal characters, because they don't want this to become too easy, or at least I would not want them to. You know, if we saw each house get another three two-cost loyal card characters anyway to trigger Breaking Ties, I'd be a little worried. And at the opposite end of the spectrum, I wonder if this doesn't put a little bit of a constraint on them to lower the cost of non-unique characters and push them down from, say, those six or seven cost non-uniques, so that the economic hit isn't as backbreaking if Breaking Ties goes off. And, you know, between those two factors, I feel like there's a lot of push and pull here to start kind of normalizing the character curve to, say, you know, 3 to 5 gold. In order to keep those swings from being too wild. So, I don't know. That's my caveat to the card, I think.
But I can see, I mean, it just requires responsible design work from here out. And I don't mind with them pushing. I like it because it's a nice chance outside of deck building where the loyal, non-loyal really matters. And I like the thought of seeing more of that.
Okay, well, sounds like maybe that's most of our thoughts here on Breaking Ties. Should we go ahead and let our oh-so-patient listeners in on our preview cards from the Sands of Dorne? Sounds like a plan.
Apparently, well, let's Let's make them wait. What else can we talk about other than that?
You know, how's the weather? Price of gas? What'd you have for dinner tonight? All that good stuff.
It is surprisingly warm here in Iowa, for those that care.
It is not here. It's like, I don't know, 23 or something. Oh, well. See, we're actually doing it. Let's get to the cards. Okay. Well, right. Kyle dropped Breaking Ties on us. So, tell you what. How about I will take the first Lanny card, and then, Scott, you mind bringing up the last card?
So, sure. You have the best Lanny card printed in over a year.
Yeah, quite a while here. So the first Lannister card that we have here is Myrcella Baratheon. She, of course, is unique. She happens to be non-loyal. She's 3 cost, 3 strength, intrigue and power icons. She has the lady trait. And Myrcella Baratheon does not kneel when declared as an attacker against an opponent with fewer cards in his or her hand than you. I mean, I agree with Scott. She's one of the best Lannister cards we've seen in a long time. She's a very efficient body here. I don't know if she's impactful enough that I want to really build a deck around a bunch of her, but she is another unique for Lannister that slots in really well as like a 1X. Kind of plays into the intrigue theme by wanting to have more cards in your hand, meaning you've knocked stuff out of their hand. Not kneeling to attack also kind of appears to have become a Lannister sub theme between Jaime and Cersei, Myrcella. Let's see what the event. There's no men like me. Things like that. And while not a super impressive body, not kneeling Bicon right at restrength is something that can really push a lot of challenges through, or if your opponent's really worried about losing those challenges, can make them commit a lot more resources to their defense than you're investing in that offense. So I like her a lot.
She's a solid 1X in every Lanny deck from now till whenever Lanny...
Till forever?
...is out of the meta, just like right now. besides that, she's really good. She fits in as a 1X in pretty much every deck, but not something you're going to build a deck around. She's just a good, efficient body to have. And considering how many good cards Lanny has gotten in recent history, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say in possibly a year outside of Clansman, she's the best Lanny card.
I don't think you're exaggerating either. I mean, and she's not a phenomenal card either. So that says something, like measuring our kind of tepid warmth about her compared to the rest of the cards we've had so far. She looks really good in comparison.
Yeah, the drought is finally over for the Lions. Lots to be said here. That's real good. She's not a cheap loyal, so we don't have to worry about plot abuse.
Exactly. I mean, and you know, she slots into your favorite deck, right?
Every Lanny deck, yeah.
Well, she doesn't fall in the Clansman, which is the only cards they've got good cards for in this past year.
Well, there we go. If we can convince Kyle to maybe play Clansman instead, maybe we can get him to bring that down to Moonboy a couple weeks, a week and a half, whatever.
No, I've got my deck for that figured out. I'm piggybacking off of better players, and that's usually my strong suit. So,
oh, there you go. It's a strategy.
So you're going to play Clansman. Good.
Speaking of piggybacking on things, I've got a couple weird questions or observations about the art here that I feel compelled to bring up. Number one is this dress really kind of screams Beauty and the Beast to me. Looks a lot like Belle. And then Myrcella herself looks a lot like, to me, she looks like those like my size Barbies. Like she looks like a little girl in this art. Wasn't she like a preteen in the novels? I feel like this art clearly shows a girl that's, you know, 5 or 6 years younger than I thought Myrcella was. So.
No, yeah, I was thinking the Beauty and the Beast thing, how it's supposed to be the beauty and whatever. Anyway, away from the awkward situation that we could possibly cut out from the podcast.
There's a good chance that that just magically disappears.
Yeah, to me she looks like a little girl who is posing for a picture that really doesn't want to pose for.
Also true.
But, you know, she does have her hand on her dress like she wants to curtsy. Mm-hmm. So, what is interesting to me is, outside the window, is that a window that's outside her with the to the right?
Maybe?
It's like a weird hat on? I don't know.
Yeah, there's some other kind of noble out there. What she's doing, I don't know if she's just walking or it's to like a dance or something. I don't know, she kind of maybe has a hold of her skirts, but could be a lot of things.
Anyway. Is this also a Myrcella theme that Myrcella doesn't like to kneel for something? Because the other Myrcella doesn't kneel either. Myrcella anti-kneeling.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I guess maybe that makes it feel even more like a little bit of a theme for them that even splashed into Martell by virtue of Myrcella appearing there for story reasons. So, yeah, it's kind of cool. It's definitely a theme. I don't think they can push too hard. Or,
well, they have to put more Myrcellas. That's all this means.
Oh, yeah. Well, then you've got the opportunity cost. You can only play the one Myrcella at a time.
So there's going to be a Myrcella in this Martell box coming up, right?
That's what this one is.
So that'll be the third Myrcella.
Yep.
This and is that Myrcella.
That's true, but I meant Martell version of it, too.
Ooh, that would maybe be interesting.
I don't think it'll happen, but I can hope.
What did we...
She doesn't kneel either.
Perfect. I'm all in. Give us reasonable versions. That way we don't get another Kingsguard dreamy sort of version.
Yeah, that card will never see yeah. play.
Hey, speaking of that, you want to read Extortion? Sorry, it was too good. It was too good.
One last bit. I will say that, is this, you know, the final nail in the coffin that we're just not going to see dual house cards? Because I feel like Myrcella in a Martell box, like that feels like a good moment for that, but.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I don't think they're doing it if they haven't yet.
I don't know. I still think they could. I mean, we got a big announcement that we'll talk about after our next card about a big mechanical addition to second edition. But I mean, they're bringing in a pretty big mechanical change as late as cycle 5. So, you know, I could see them still being willing to tinker with things and bring in dual house characters or other cards in, you know, another cycle or two or whenever, you know, later in the game. I honestly kind of think they would be more likely to do that in a cycle instead of a box anyway. That way it's something that rotates out if they decide they don't like it in the game.
Yeah, you only have to wait a couple of years.
Well, yeah, once we hit the first rotation point, then that's all we have to wait.
So speaking of cards that look more like Lani cards, what we just talked about wasn't a Lani card. Couldn't have been. It's playable.
Yeah. Here we go. Lay something that fits the new mold of Lannister on us.
This is extortion. It's an event. Costs nothing. Reaction. After you win an intrigue challenge as the attacking player, gain 3 gold and return up to 3 gold from the opponent's gold pool to the treasury. So positive about this card is somehow you're not actually stealing the gold, right? You're gaining gold. But if they don't have any gold, that's fine too. You still gain the gold. So thematically, it makes a lot of sense. But it makes it more playable. I still don't think it's incredibly playable, but it makes it more playable. But gold in the challenge phase is a Lani theme, which is good. This does fit the theme. And actually, Gold Road in Clansmen is quite good. And I like that theme a lot, and I hope they push it more. But I don't think this card is a card that has enough oomph to that theme to make it worthwhile. You're basically spending an event slot for a situational semi-burst of money for the price of a card in the challenges phase, and maybe it'll take away money from your opponent too if they happen to have it.
Yeah.
That's situational and situational and situational for a non-repeatable effect. Seems kind
of
bad.
Yeah, and on top of all those situational things, I mean, this is kind of a loose rule here, but I would make an argument that challenge phase only gold is probably really only worth about half of what marshaling phase gold is worth that carries over to it.
But this is in challenge phase only. You can use this in dominance, man. Or standing.
I could. How am I winning the intrigue challenge in those phases?
Yeah. With that thought, if I could pop an intrigue challenge off in the middle of marshaling, this is great. But until we get a way to do that, I would struggle with this card.
That would make extortion suddenly awesome if there was a way to do that.
I will say, okay, and this may be a great way to segment this. In a world after shadows exists, maybe this is good because people are going to hold on to their gold for shadow stuff.
It does feel more passable. I was, you know, giving extortion like an F- mentally, so to speak, before today's announcement that we'll be talking about in a minute, the return of shadows. And now that I saw that, I thought, well, extortion got better. I still don't know if it's gonna get all the way up to good, but it gets noticeably better at least.
I mean, we'll have to see what Lani gets for shadows, but we'll talk about it. The shadows card they got spoiled ain't good.
Well, it's also, you know, the potential there to deny your opponent some shadows effects. If they're needing to sit on more gold to power more cards that are not standard martial, then extortion's value goes up some. So maybe it'll be better.
That is true. This is a relatively easy card to play around, though, if you know your opponent's playing.
Also true. That one surprise move only happens once. Especially if you're in a tournament.
Yeah, I mean, but even besides that, like, it's a card, people know it's a card. And, I mean, it depends on the Shadows card. So if there's a Shadows card that ends up being something like the equivalent of a Vengeance for Elia that you really do have to wait to do it, then yeah, that money helps. But if it's the equivalent of Dornish Spy, I mean, it's, you'd rather not wait as much. But if you're playing against Lannister and you actually think there's a chance they play this card, then okay, Dornish Spy a little early.
Yeah, now that shadows will be full on actions. Here we are, just talking about that article a bunch. That really, really opens up their flexibility. Maybe we should go ahead and move to the article then. After my one last observation, that I still get a Beauty and the Beast vibe from Extortion's art, and it's not even the same artist. But I look at this dude that seems to have actually, you know, taken the money from the guy, and I can't help but think he feels like a Gaston whose hair color has been changed.
I don't think there were any men of color in Beauty and the Beast.
Hair color.
At least not Disney.
Hair color.
No, but the guy on the couch.
I mean, he's kind of shadowed a little bit and maybe tanned, but I don't know. Debatable whether he's of color, as the saying goes. Could go any direction, I suppose.
Yes, well, I feel bad for him. Poor guy.
Well, he shouldn't have been, I assume, sleeping around, judging by the woman behind him, but I'm just guessing. If you put yourself in a position to be extorted.
So there's like a tree behind him. Is that the sigil of a house?
Ooh, there's bound to be some house with a tree sigil, right?
I mean, Ironwood. Right, is Ironwood a tree?
Yeah, I think so. Could be House Forester.
Because it looks like that's an intentional circle with the tree design inside it. Or I just might be crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of does look like it. I don't know much what else it would be. Huh.
This is why we need the more Nedley people, like Roy, yeah, who read the book way too many times.
We need folks that have all of the minor house sigils memorized.
The sad thing is, I do have a playmat that has them all on it, but I don't recognize that it's probably a sigil.
House Rowan, maybe? Rowan of Golden Grove? They're sworn to Tyrell. Stealing money from the Tyrells seems about the most fitting right now.
They got
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
Well, I'm gonna look this up, and by the end of the podcast, I'll try to figure it out. But we should let people have more interesting things to hear.
You don't think it's interesting to just randomly sort of try to track down what minor house that might possibly represent?
Absolutely not.
Shucks. Okay, well, back to Tim.
I was just looking, you knew what house it was, to be honest. So I didn't.
I got nothing.
It's certainly a house, though.
Well, what if we go ahead then and kind of send things over to the big article that we've been hinting at and mentioning lines from and kind of dancing about? Why don't we just jump right in? We had the fifth cycle for the game announced, the Dance of Shadows cycle, which was kind of a interesting name. I don't really remember that phrase from the books. Do you guys?
No.
Okay.
Got me.
Oh, well. Oh, well. But the Bringing Shadows back. The first edition mechanic that was added in, I think, the second cycle of the first edition LCG and is, to date, my favorite mechanical aspect ever added to the game. It's been tweaked a little bit here in this edition. So essentially, any card with shadows, it's going to have the shadow keyword with a cost next to it, which functions a little bit like ambush. And then it's got kind of a special frame and coloring around the gold cost. So what it is, you can go ahead and play these cards like normal, marshal them out, play them at third event, whatever it might be. be. Or you can put them into shadows for 2 gold, which places them face down in an out-of-play area. And then as just an action, anytime you have an action window, you can flip them face up and put them into play by paying whatever the number there is next to their shadow keyword. And I think that's really cool additional flexibility compared to first edition, to be able to play them normally is handy, and being able to just play it anytime as an action, it has huge like strategy implications, which is really cool. You guys have any specific thoughts about the mechanics at large, or did you want to kick into a couple of the example cards?
I think this is way more streamlined than when it existed in first ed. And I think that's probably the biggest thing going for it. Also, like you said, you know, you talk about now it works in any action window. And you think about, well, a lot of people consider the most broken card in first ed was Mira Reed, because that was her ability, essentially, versus everyone else's. I mean, the repeatability, yes. But part of it was that if she could fit into any action window, and other Shadows cards couldn't do that. And now that every Shadows card does that, I think the effect, the mechanic is very powerful, but again, it feels... You clearly understand when it happens, since it's an action, how you react to it happening is more streamlined. I think there's a lot of design choices that now that this is brought back, I think makes the play experience much smoother.
I think for me, it's more of a wait and see to see the design of these Shadows cards. It could be really good or it could be really, really bad. Depends on how they're designed. You have to be careful. I like drink water a lot.
Drink water? Really interesting. Yeah. Why don't you lay them on us?
So drink water. If you marshal him, is a 6 cost, 5 strength, military intrigue bicon, so loyal Martell character. He's a knight. He has a renown. And if you want to put him in the shadows, he has Shadow 5. I'll read the parenthesis on Shadows. It's the first time ever. Marshal this card face down into Shadows for 2 gold. As an action, pay 5 gold to bring it into play face up. And here's the reaction. After Sir Garrus Drinkwater comes out of Shadows, choose a card in your plot deck and switch it with a card in your used pile. So... this is really, really good, especially in Martell, where you're often running things like double march or double retaliation. Or maybe if you're playing Wars to Come, you're running both doubles, and this lets you get a third one, which can be extremely powerful. But also, if you're using your plot deck kind of as a sideboard, you're running things like Barring the Gates or... Nothing burns like the cold, and it isn't useful in that matchup. You can get rid of it for a different card that you use once that is very useful in that matchup. So it's just very flexible. Plus, 5 strength Bicon Renown Body is still good. And with the positive trait, also good.
The more I think about it, the more I really like that these have normal costs associated with them. As well, not to circle back, I was just thinking about it. I was like, as a 6 for 5, like evaluating that if there's some world where you can't play cards and shadows, let's say, the fact that you still have a mechanic to get him out, I like that. But yeah, he is solid. Just even before you get to his text box, he's stomachable, and then you go into renown and an awesome plot ability. Bruno is one of the premier players this game, and he always talks about how plots are what makes this game unique and are our most powerful tools. And it is nice to see effects that help you with that are always going to be extremely powerful. And I think this is definitely the case here.
Oh, yeah. Extremely powerful. I mean, powerful enough that we've seen ways to manipulate your plots in earlier renditions of the game, both the CCG and the first edition of the LCG, become really kind of problematic, shall we say. So it's interesting to see two cards dumped on us here in this preview that go to mucking with plots. I feel like they've been pretty conservative with the couple plot fiddly effects that we've had so far in second edition. But now it seems like maybe they're kind of accelerating the ones that we get. I'm hoping, you know, these are still pretty conservative. Like Garrus is pretty expensive. You're not getting to instantly change into that new plot that you've put back in your unused pile. Instant reveals, I think, had kind of garnered most of the trouble in the past. So I like that maybe they've learned from past mistakes and are trying to make these interesting and good, but walk that tightrope here. I mean, and just from a broad stroke sense, I mean, plots are one of the most unique things about Game of Thrones. It's always one of the selling points that I use whenever I'm trying to get people hooked on the game. It's really unique and interesting, and kind of one of the defining things about second edition, or well, about Game of Thrones in general. And you know, I don't blame them for printing some more cards that interact with that more, that try to push that envelope and do cool things with plots. I think that's territory we've kind of been scared off of in the past. So I'm interested to check it out now, as long as we can walk that tightrope.
So I think that neither of these are the scary plot manipulation cards. The one that worries me is, someone always tells, the ability to cancel valor and counting and stuff like that of your opponents can be scary. But I think that these both are playing with your own plot deck, so I actually think that can be quite good. It's trying to push your plan forward and makes you play. We can get into the second one. I think it's probably worth doing, since we're talking about changing plot effect cards. Both of them as a group.
I think so. Tell you what, I'll go ahead and read that one out here real quick. That's another Lannister card, actually. It's a loyal event. Beneath the Bridge of Dream. Now, this one has no cost. It actually has a dash in the cost box there. So that's another slightly new thing. And they've clarified that means it cannot be played as normal. It can only be played out of shadows. So, of course, it has the shadow keyword with a shadow cost of 0. And then interrupt when you choose a plot card to reveal in the plot phase. Instead, shuffle your used pile in your plot deck and choose a plot card to reveal at random. Until the end of the round, increase the gold value on your revealed plot card by 2. Now, first up, I want to ask a rules question here that I don't know that I've actually seen explained, because Sir Garrus, right, he's even got the reminder text here for us about shadows. So we can see it on a card, and we know it's not just a typo or a write-o or whatever in the article. But in the article, it also says you can bring them out of shadows, capital bold, as actions in any phase, right? And Garrus reiterates this without the capital bold, but says as an action, right? Beneath the Bridge of Dream is an interrupt. So I feel like we're going to immediately kind of need something added to the FAQ to say that, like, something to specifically clarify that the timing word on any of these cards overrides the shadow's action requirement. Otherwise, I can't play Bridge of Dream at all, can I?
No, you're right. This is another FFG mess up of rules. Actually, they did it in a different aspect in this article too, on the card. So if you read the parenthesis of Shadow's card, such as Garrus, I'll read it again. Marshal this card face down into Shadows for 2 gold. As an action, pay 5 gold to bring it into play face up. If the article didn't state that you can also set up cards in the Shadows, reading this card, you would think you cannot set up cards in the Shadows.
Also true.
Is it only... So, either you can't put cards in the Shadows during setup, and the article lies, or they messed up the parenthesis wording on the cards. Which I think is more likely.
Yeah, that is unfortunate. If we're missing some kind of quality control issues on these, but anyway, aside from that, the Beneath the Bridge of Dream, that's the other plot manipulation we're talking about here. Random is just kind of a mess, right? And accidentally pulling your valor and getting a 4 gold valor is probably not a good enough trade-off for accidentally, you know, blowing up the board whenever you didn't mean to.
Plus, you already invested 2 gold in that valor, so really this card breaks even on money. It's negative. Is negative one card advantage, and you spin the wheel for your plot.
Yeah,
that sounds bad.
It's more that random gambling aspect for Lannister, which I think the downside on that is magnified a lot in the plot deck compared to the regular deck, the regular draw deck.
Yeah, but gambling, it's a Lannister theme too. That's what Gregor does. He gambles.
I've never been a fan of that gambling theme for them, but FFG wants to push it.
I'm not a fan of pillage randomness either. But FFG wants to push that with the Marauders too.
So true. So true.
And Greyjoy has a lot of the same effects with pillage. So they're going to push it. It's a Lanny Greyjoy theme. Like, there's Farrah Greyjoy themes mixed together. There is also Lanny Greyjoy themes. Apparently Greyjoy, which isn't a house that makes tons of alliances in the books, likes to make alliances and have themes with other houses.
Yeah, I... For the same reasons I talked about earlier about plot manip, not getting to choose, maybe there's some really brilliant builds where you feel like you can get away with any of your plots dropping. Like maybe some sort of weird hyper aggro where they're all just aggro plots and what flavor it takes doesn't necessarily matter as much.
Why would you want to play a card in that deck? You're just wasting a card slot.
I know. I'm struggling to find any kind of reason. I just am too scared of that. Like, it's you picking your plot is too important.
Yeah.
I mean, you get all your plots back. So on some level, like, that's good. On the other side, I cannot imagine taking a round and just spinning the wheel on it. Like, games don't go that many rounds anyways. Can you imagine a 20% of your game was pure luck?
And
that's
a lot of fun. That's called...
Go ahead.
That's called draw, and that's called this in the weird randomness of pillage and fave.
But that's like a set... That's the variability we all deal with. This is And the plot deck is the one place where that variability doesn't exist. And now, I just think you lose a lot in the my plot is random, you get to choose yours, that the effect of I get my used plots back and this one gets pumped by two just doesn't, I don't think it balances out. I think that's way too much of a loss, especially if you think about maybe like a store tournament or a small game night thing where you're only expecting where you need to crank out four wins to get first. But anything where you're seeing more than 20 some players and you're going to be playing some rounds, I just don't see this not backfiring at least once. And if you lose in a top cut because of an event like this, like Will says, you roll the dice into your valor and it bones you, like that's not a situation players want. So I just don't see this seeing play. But if it does, it's going to be by someone who's way smarter than me.
I feel like it's kind of pushing at cross purposes again here, right? Like on the one hand, you're getting your whole plot deck back, which feels like you're pushing to a longer, more control-oriented game, right? So you can reuse certain key plots. But on the other hand, revealing at random lends itself to those more aggro decks where the plots are more interchangeable, right? You hit something with high claim or a claim multiplying effect, like, say, heads on spikes or high gold, like something that is all upside to you to accelerate your game plan rather than drawing the game out to take advantage of having access to your first three or four plots again or whatever it might be. It just, I don't know. I don't feel like it interacts well with the two ends of what it's doing.
Yeah, this makes extortion look good.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Well, in that case, we've got one last one here. Kyle, you haven't read one from this article. You want to drop the other Martell card on us?
Sure. All right, here we go. This is the Shadow City. It's unique and loyal, so you can't be a... hitting it with that plot. Three cost, Dorne, Shadow 2, and passively says, reduce the cost to marshal each of your cards into shadows by one. So that's good. I like that a lot. And it challenges action, you can kneel the Shadow City and discard a card from shadows to draw two cards. So ditch a card, get two. That you paid two gold last round, well, at some point for. So I like the reducer. I guess you only paid one for it because of this, theoretically. But the shadow specific economy is nice. I think that's a cool direction to go. But when you think about it, this ability essentially reads, pay a gold, ditch a card to draw two cards. So I don't know how great that is, but
yeah, I think that really is pretty strong. I mean, card filtering is pretty cool.
This is true. This is true. So yeah, in that case, I mean, I guess in that regard, yes, it is when you want it draw and it is economy all in one. So from an efficiency standpoint, yes, that's pretty good.
And it's HODable. Running a lot of shadows.
Yeah.
HOD this
makes me
all the time. Maybe they got it wrong in their article and they meant to say that this is your HOD location. You could set up shadow cards for one gold.
I definitely don't think that part works.
Man, I hope that all doesn't work. Over that.
I don't really
know. Oh, no, of course it doesn't, because it says marshal the card, and setup is not marshal.
No, I was joking about the rules issue that they have without saying you could set them up in the parenthesis.
Ah.
Yeah. I think it's good. It makes me wonder, especially in light of this potentially working for House with the Red Door, if we are not going to see a Shadows agenda come in this cycle, like one would have previously expected. Makes me wonder if they're just going to let this type of thing pick up that slack, which I don't know. I mean, I think it could be potentially good to use this as House with the Red Door, but I would be a little bummed if we don't have a standalone Shadows agenda. I want more agendas.
I'm shocked that you want this. I've never heard you say this
before. Really? I'll just keep saying it. Eventually somebody will listen.
Danny listens to every podcast. Oh. Danny, please come join us on the podcast. You could join our rotation every other week.
Perfect.
We record on Tuesday. Your expertise is very welcome.
You know, I just noticed something.
Hey, that would be a kind of fun segment if we had like a rules time with Danny once a month. He came on and we tried to understand why things are.
That would actually be interesting to me anyway.
Danny, would you be open to this? Please email Will at will@thewhitebook.com.
That's not actually the email address, but
I was like, I don't think that's Will's email.
I don't know offhand. But Will will give you his email right now.
Send that to contact@whitebookpodcast.com.
Or I think you know how to contact Will anyway if you're Danny. So do that.
I think he's got multiple avenues, or he can bug someone else at FFG that knows how to get a hold of me if he has trouble.
I'll call him. I have his phone number.
I
don't have.
I'm sure he won't mind, a bunch of players from this game designs. Constantly call in to bug him about stuff.
I mean, I'm going to tell him that dupes suck. Let's get rid of dupes.
That sounds like a whole podcast topic right there. Or at least half of one.
I think I've brought it up on many a podcast. I've just never had the full debate. But we will one day. When Danny's on, we will have this talk.
That could be fun. I would like to hear more about that sort of thing from him.
You get him on, and I will be very happy to talk about that with Danny.
Well, you heard it here, Danny. Get a hold of us. I just want to throw out one last thought of my own here about Shadows, aside from my general excitement to have it back shortly anyway, because I'm very, very excited for what it does for the game. And my hopes that it maybe makes some more control oriented builds more viable. The type of control I'm more historically used to anyway, I should say. But that's neither here nor there. Anyway, the parting thought was going to be that I've been looking at this article off and on all day and staring at it the whole time we were talking. And only about 2 minutes ago realized what the hell is actually in that black circle next to the gold cost. I kept looking and trying to figure it out, and I'm turning it different ways in my head. I'm like, they look like two little teepees or a mountain or like the letter M. Like the sure, two of these good cards we see are Martell, but the rest aren't. What is going on? And it was only just a moment ago I realized that's got to be a V overlaid on top of an M for Valor Margolis. So, super cool cards. I wish that was a little clearer at first glance, though.
I don't like that we're just pimping out this plot. No love for Doe Harris or First Snow or every other reason in the game, man.
They're just not the same. They're just not the same. They're not iconic.
Are you sure it's just not an M for marshalling, since that's the marshalling cost?
But why would you need to denote that for the cost that's in the exact same place and format that it is on every other card?
Yeah, I'm Team Valor. with the purple ribbon.
Because these cards, you don't always just pay the marshalling cost. There's another cost. So you, this is the marshalling cost. The other cost is not the marshalling cost.
Nope. I also don't know why there's two non-Shadows cards, sort of spoiled slash hidden, in an article about Shadows.
They just wanted a card fan so you knew everything.
Well, there's only one that we know is not Shadows.
No, there's two. There's two.
Well, neither of them.
No, you're right. Because it doesn't have the M. Exactly. We know it's not Shadows. But he looks so buff holding up his arm. So it makes up for everything.
Does look good. Plus, I love that Varamyr Six Skins art. It's cool.
It is pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
Was Six Skins good in First Dead?
He was a bit like Corset Arion, returned from hand to put creatures into play, I believe. He was like a 2-drop though, so he was real cheap.
So he wasn't this guy.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It looks like this one because I can see Begins and Until the and Choose One. So I think he's maybe going to be a little bit like a Walking Brotherhood agenda. Choose from these set of abilities at the start of every challenge phase or something along those lines, i.e. warg into a specific, you know, animal, your choice which animal.
Oh, it's clear what animal he is.
That giant polar bear? Yeah.
That's what he is.
I hope so.
You know, we always see this. But why don't we ever see him as a polar bear?
Just the polar bear, no human body.
Yeah. I guess I don't think polar he ever does that. Well, I guess he does, it's implied, but he gets what, stuck as a wolf? Is that right?
No, it's a hawk or owl or something. It's a bird he gets stuck in.
Hmm.
The more you know. Props and slops. Anybody got anything they want to...
Slops and props.
Yeah. Anything folks want to lay on us?
I will. I will... slop FFG's ability to put the rules clearly on cards, as we just mentioned.
Yeah. It's looking pretty dicey. We need an FAQ already. Actually, it'd be a nice little show of faith, if you're listening, if you went ahead and pushed out an FAQ about, you know, exactly how those Shadows rules work, officially across the board, even before that chapter pack hit. That would be awesome. I think there's precedent for that. Haven't we, or maybe Netrunner or somebody, gotten an update like that even before the pack quite hit? Okay.
Dang. I don't know.
In my head, I was sort of thinking it had been Netrunner, and I knew you had played Netrunner before, so I was hoping you could save my bacon there. Oh, well.
FFG is not good at being organized. So I just don't have faith.
We'll wait and see what happens.
Another person we should get on this podcast is head of organization at FFG. Actually, does FFG have like a COO?
COO?
That'd be a good person to talk.
Not sure I know that particular abbreviation. Oh!
COO? Chief Operating Officer?
I heard CL is in Lentz Officer.
Leprechaun?
Yeah, Leprechaun's probably a better example, but I felt like using my last name.
Yeah. So I think that guy's got some explaining to do, or at least some clarification for us. Yeah, and he'd be a good person to talk to. The business end.
Yeah, I think that would be an interesting angle that we haven't really quite hit before.
Will, you got the connection.
I'll see if I can find out who that actually is, if anyone.
I like it. Next podcast.
It may not be that fast. We'll see if we can find somebody.
Coming to you in half a year. The COO of FG.
Coming eventually. At some point. You heard it here first, folks.
If they have one.
Unless Will cuts it.
Unless I cut it. That's a good call. Gives me time, you know, now that we've got this delay. Try and reach out to FFG, and if they say, ha, no way, no chance, then I can just cut this, and listeners will never have their hopes brought up.
I have seen the CEO do an interview, so the COO is probably more likely than the CEO to do an interview. I don't know, but we'll find this out.
There we go.
It's my
investigative reporter, Scott Levine, reporting for the White Book.
It'll just might take about like 7-8 plots, but I'll make it
happen. Just don't, you know, shuffle them back and reveal one. It could get gruesome.
Woohoo! I feel like I should have a thing, a prop or a slop. I'm sleepy. I'm gonna prop this warm weather. So my heating bill finally goes down. That would be nice.
There you go. Bet that.
Hopefully the blizzards are past. Yeah, furnaces don't. They just want to run and run. Also, I'm going to prop that when we spoil these cards, they'll be in English. And I won't have to fight with my phone to pop open the comment section to get the translation. Since all the second ed cards have been, you know, French spoilers, what feels like all week now.
Yeah,
you know, they're all criminals, computer hackers, SMP servers, all those things. Netrunner was made after the French.
But which faction are they?
They're clearly the criminals.
I mean,
we just specified
criminal
that.
Was the best faction. Followed very closely by Adam.
Well, Adam is kind of cool.
Maybe we'll just turn this into a Netrunner podcast. Who cares if I haven't played in, let's see, about 10 months.
Well, I mean, the COO still is a valid person having the podcast then, so I'm fine with it.
Perfect. Well, I'm going to go ahead and throw out a prop to Planet Comic Con in Kansas City there over the past weekend. Very, very respectable sized Comic Con up there. Obviously, it's nothing on the order of, say, San Diego, but it's a very good one. Coming up, this was their 19th year, so I'm sure next year will be even bigger. And it's been growing pretty wildly this year. They had some big news. They had Jason Momoa there, which listeners may know as Khal Drogo. Fortunately, I did not want to pay the extra for his VIP bundle. He was only there for one day, so you had to buy a separate package to get to see him and get signatures and that sort of thing. And it was like an extra $150 or something like that. So I was not going to do that. However, did get to meet Jerome Flynn, which many of you may know as Ron, and got to sit in on his panel and his talk. So that was very cool. I kicked myself for forgetting and not actually bringing a copy of the Ron card to get his signature on. That's what I get for rushing around so so much, but he was cool to meet. Met several comic creators I really liked. So some big props to Marguerite Bennett, Christopher Priest, and Tom King. We're all very cool to chat with for a little bit. What else? Oh, and Matthew Lewis, who folks may know from Harry Potter, where he played Neville. He was also very cool to meet and chit chat with. So, pretty awesome weekend all around.
What did you cosplay as?
Funny you should ask that. I cosplayed as a Marvel Comics character from an evidently very little known miniseries of theirs from about 6 years ago. The miniseries was called Mystery Men. It was a retro kind of 1930s pulp hero-y start of superheroes sort of thing. So the character was the operative. He's essentially a knockoff of the Shadow. And yeah, definitely got a lot of questions about, oh, hey, the Shadow, wait a minute, aren't you supposed to have like a red scarf? So I don't think I'll quite make that mistake again. I should
go get Spin Psylocke. Your new wife.
Hard to mistake that purple hair. Anybody else do anything worthwhile lately? Any good TV?
No, I am super boring. I would like to say this was a nice, positive episode where I didn't do any cranky things. So I'm sure our listeners are going to love that. That's great. So, boom. Look at that.
Here you go. New players, also don't try to play Martell right away. There's some factions that are easier to play than others. I recommend you play factions like Lanny. And Greyjoy.
Yeah, I would definitely push pretty hard for Greyjoy for that right now.
I think Greyjoy Reigns is the best deck in the game right now. So that's a good place to start. But you should probably just play more aggro Greyjoy. Play Greyjoy Crossing.
And that still very, very good if you don't get out in front of it pretty quick.
It's still very good. Sure. I'm giving best advice.
I would like to prop Thrones of War like everyone else did. That's a community event that's been going on for several years. And to see it constantly grow is great. Ryan does an amazing job with it. Also very excited about the deck that won. The stream is up there if you want to go watch it, but this Martell Rose deck looks innovative and nifty. I'm a big fan.
Semi slap Tuasa. I completely understand. But please share your deck with because I want to play them.
The joys of net decking.
I will give you my deck list.
Sounds like a fair trade to me.
It's a bold move there, Cotton.
Oh. Hey, offer stands. The COO of FFG, every deck list I have, if you join the podcast.
There you go. I'm sure God's really willing to put himself in the danger zone. Oh. That ends another chapter of the White Book? Yeah.
Oh, it might not be
the
white
shadow book. Shadows. I like the way you think.
Dun, dun, dun.
We'll be right back.